and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of June 9th, 2019. Today we're joined by our co-host, the author and educator, Ms. Mariah Tinger. How are you doing, Mariah?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Good, good. Good to have you with us. So, a bunch of stuff happening right here in our home state of Massachusetts, and of course, things that happen in Massachusetts are often, almost by definition, a microcosm of things that will happen, are happening in other places, or will happen in other places. So understanding what's going on here has good educational value for people who may not live in Massachusetts. And of course, if you live here, it's good to know what the heck's going on. So this past week, the state of Massachusetts has put out what's called a requisition, in quotation marks, for a big purchase of wind power from offshore wind sites, which will mean that there'll be a process of leasing tracts of ocean water where wind turbines can be built, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, all this harkens back to and began with a bill that was passed in 2016 that called for the installation of 1,600 megawatts, that is to say 1.6 gigawatts of power from wind turbines. And of course, that has been essentially done. There are two 800 megawatts, all these numbers add up, there are two 800 megawatt wind installations that are being currently in process. The most advanced one is Vineyard Wind, which will be 800 megawatts off of the Vineyard in Nantucket sometime over the next few years. Okay. What happened was that as part of that original bill from 2016, the state, the legislature told the executive, that is to say the Baker administration, to examine again whether or not there should be even more wind power. And the Baker administration has decided that yes, in fact, things look so good that we should install basically double the amount of wind power that is being requisitioned by the state. So what does that mean? What does requisition mean? It means that the legislature has told the utility, the utilities, to go out and purchase power. That is to say, go find somebody to make electricity for us. And that's basically a power that the legislature has to give to the utility to go, and it's that utility that then goes to the wind turbine people and say, hey, I will give you X amount of money for 20 years if you build a wind turbine out in the North Atlantic. So that's how it all goes. And so I guess the first thing is that it's really good news that we're going to now be up to 3.2 gigawatts. I have planning to have 3.2 gigawatts of electricity coming from offshore wind turbines in the not-too-distant future. I think a couple of shows ago, Mariah, we were talking about the closing of the Pilgrim Power Plant.
I was just going to ask you about that. Yes, this is going to help. How much
will this offset? A fair amount of it, actually. I think that the nuclear plant was something like a gigawatt of power. So we're talking about replacing that. Of course, it's not going to be online for a few years, yada, yada, yada. But, I mean, it's a good step in the right direction. The complaint that I heard, I mean, there's always a fly in the ointment here. The complaint that I heard is that because the utilities now are going to have been told by the legislature to go make a 20-year purchase, they're committing to a price of electricity for the next 20 years, that is to say until the year 2039, right? Whatever that fixed rate is, that's what we're going to be paying for those wind turbines. And generally speaking, we think the wind turbine electricity is going to be pretty cheap, but there is always the possibility that over the next 20 years, there will be additional improvements in the efficiency of generating electricity. And in 10 or 15 years, those wind turbines might look like white elephants, and there'll be some other marvelous way to make electricity that we haven't even dreamed of yet. But we're going to be stuck with these 20-year leases.
That's often something you go up against, right? You know, you lock in the price of the solar panels because you're thinking, well, this seems like a good rate. I want to keep it. And then all of a sudden, oops.
And what they're saying is that even with the Vineyard Wind guys who are in process, they have gone from a certain number of 6 megawatt. Each wind turbine can generate 6 megawatts to each wind turbine can generate 9 megawatts, which is this huge increase in the effectiveness of each wind turbine over the course of a couple of years. So if you let that go for 20 years, what's going to happen? It's just, it's one of these things. I mean, I think it's great that we're moving ahead to get this power in the water, get these turbines in the water. It's just, someone's always going to complain, right? But
Well, I mean, it is absolutely fantastic to hear the Baker administration supporting this and pushing this through. I mean, to wanting to double down on these wind turbines is excellent news. But to be honest, I hope that we keep continue to improve the technology for wind turbines continue to improve the technology for renewables in general. You don't want to hedge on, well, oh goodness, we want the price to stay good, so let's hope there's not
improvement. Yeah.
I mean, so it's that's definitely kind of a tricky thing, and we had to sort of think about that. We have our solar panels on our house, and we had to kind of think about some of these questions, because you know that the technology for solar panels has come so far in the past 10-15 years. Surely in the next 10-15 years it's going to continue to improve, and we're going to be stuck with, you know, the most inefficient solar panels out there, right?
20-year-old.
But we're locked in. Yeah, exactly.
But I mean, yeah. So I mean, but I think this is the bet you got to take. I mean, the other interesting thing about this purchase of wind power is that so the electricity pricing is so arcane and weird, right? It's hard to really follow. But somehow, the legislature had written a rule that said any follow-on wind turbine projects, like we're discussing right now, this doubling, the price for those things, the price of the electricity has to be less than the price of the first installation. Right? So in other words, these things that are being proposed now have to come in at a price per kilowatt hour that is less than the thing that's going to be built off the vineyard. Right? The Vineyard Wind, that set the standard. This next guy has to be less than that. But Vineyard Wind came in at an unbelievably low price. It turns out that they were way ahead of the curve and had a very low electricity price. So now the next guys have to beat that. And that was so that you wouldn't end up like paying off the utilities with huge amounts of money. But then that lower price on the second round raises the question of whether or not places – the people that would be building the wind turbines are going to cut costs by maintaining their facilities for construction somewhere else. And places like New Bedford, they're not going to get the investment to develop the local industry, yada, 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 because they got to beat this price. I don't know. There's a lot of it's confusing, a lot of subtext to it. But I think the good news is that, in fact, we're going to double the amount of wind turbines off the coast of Massachusetts and gosh darn it, that's a good thing, right?
Yeah. I mean, it does make me, you know, the first thought that comes to my head is, will it be financially viable to continue creating wind energy with this sort of arcane price structure? And, you know, if I'm understanding it correctly, and then will it be financially attractive for people to go into this?
Well, and there's debates about, you know, should they raise the cap? I think the utilities want to raise the cap because that allows them to make more money. And it just gets more and more obscure as to exactly how money's changing hands. And I guess it's back, if I could, you know, wave the bloody flag for a moment. The whole idea that the utilities are in this for a profit, right? These are state mandated institutions that are profit driven, is what kind of screws everything up, because they're always angling to make a buck somehow, and they're not acting for the good of the population. They're acting for the good of the shareholders of the utility, and so there's always this gamesmanship that goes on. And I mean, it's a bridge too far to talk about getting rid of the utilities, but right now we got good news that we're going to have wind turbines.
So there's that.
That we'll put up an article. You can try and decipher some of the arcane, obscure facts about electricity pricing as well as we do. Another thing that's happening in Massachusetts this week has been the idea of hearings on environmental justice bills. So I had the good fortune to go to the State House and participate, not participate, to stand and watch other people give testimony for environmental justice bills that are in front of the Massachusetts State House. And it's a pretty good thing. Environmental justice has risen to be become a very important climate issue for many reasons, not the least of which being that most of the installations of fossil fuel infrastructure, that is to say pipelines, compressor stations, you know, electrical power plants and whatnot, usually end up being stuck in neighborhoods that don't have the political clout to fight back. And those are typically neighborhoods where English is not the first language, you know, probably a lot of people of color, I mean, all that kind of lowing, all that kind of stuff. That's where the bad stuff goes. And it's just unjust. And so the environmental justice bills before the State House call for some interesting things. What they call for is that all the hearings about the installation of new infrastructure of any kind be conducted in, be translated into the language of the population that's going to be affected. Right? There was a woman who got up and started off her hearing speech, her 3 minutes of speech, by speaking Spanish. And then she finally stopped and said, "So, Mr. Legislator, did you understand anything I said?" And they all shook their head. No, they didn't. And she said, "Well, that's what my constituents were faced with when they went to an environmental hearing conducted in English. They didn't understand anything, and so they were not able to effectively respond." And so the environmental justice bills are really important for several reasons. Not the, I mean, just you'd be morally right, but from a sort of a, to my feeling, from a political perspective, you're, by having environmental justice bills, you're empowering your allies, people who have a vested interest in fighting back against the fossil fuel infrastructures, to try and stop that. And so the environmental justice stuff is important, and it is worthy of your consideration. There's MCAN has several bills that we're supporting for environmental justice improvements, and basically codifying stuff that the Patrick administration did by executive order, but they want to make that now law. But there you go. There's an environmental justice. If you haven't heard about it before, you've heard about it here. You heard it here first. Remember that. And it's relevant for the following reason. The following reason. There is yet another move. Well, wait, let me back up before I depart. Let me say the following thing. We've, Mariah, we've talked about the compressor station in Weymouth, right? Natural gas compressor station that's being proposed to be built in Weymouth. This building that will repressurize natural gas, have a lot of risks. It's right on the Four River Bridge in downtown Weymouth, Hingham, Quincy, all come together. Lots of people. It's an environmental justice area. There are buildings, there are environmental justice communities that this, in Weymouth, where this compressor plant is being plunked right beside. And they were saying that if these bills that are being pushed now had been enforced at the time that the compressor thing was first proposed, it would have gotten a lot more opposition early on because people would have been empowered to say something about it. So this stuff has real consequences. One of the other real consequences has to do with the following thing. And Mariah, let me tell you, have you ever seen had a fire, you burn wood in your fire?
Of course, yeah.
Yeah, make stuff hot. And it's possible to make electricity by using wood to boil water to make steam and drive your electricity turbines. Burning that wood and other kind of woody material is called, that stuff's called biomass. It's a very fancy word for wood, I think. But anyway, biomass is, and people argue that burning wood is in fact clean energy on the belief that the clean that when you burn wood, of course, it's carbon dioxide that's not fossilized. It hasn't been hidden underground for the last 65 million years. It's carbon that was in a tree a couple years ago. Now you're putting it back into the air, and lo and behold, you're going to grow another tree to recapture that carbon dioxide, and it's a closed cycle. And so burning wood for energy is clean. That was a big debate in the Patrick administration a few years ago, and the Patrick administration, for various reasons, decided that burning wood, burning biomass, was not a renewable energy. And it turns out that the Baker administration now is trying to revise all those rules to allow the burning of wood to generate electricity with a lot of attendant environmental damages in terms of climate effects. I mean, it's not clean. And the
Black carbon is a real problem with burning wood, right? That's
absolutely
what, particulate matter in the atmosphere is a very potent greenhouse sort of part of greenhouse gas emissions.
Right, and the whole argument that the tree is going to recapture the carbon dioxide in 20 years, I don't think we have 20 years to fool around, and there's no guarantee that you're going to recapture the same amount of carbon that you burn. I mean, just I don't buy it, right? But anyway, the Baker administration is trying to relax those rules essentially to allow industry to build wood-fired electricity plants. And I've been talking for a long time, but this all comes back around to the idea that one of the plants that would be given the green light for to use biomass to make electricity is in Springfield, Massachusetts, in an environmental justice community. Right? So all this stuff comes together. Everything comes back around that there is an environmental justice aspect to the use of biomass to generate electricity, and it's something that does not seem to be a very good deal. It turns out there was a hearing in Springfield just the other day about this, and I got a chance to talk to Oriana Riley, who is from MCAN. She was visiting and participated in that hearing, and so what I wanted to do is play some of that, play that tape. All right, Mariah, so let's go to the, as they say on the sports channel, let's go to the tapes. Hi, so we caught up with Oriana Riley, who is the Municipal Light Plant Program Coordinator for the Massachusetts Climate Action Network. How are you doing, Oriana?
I'm doing well, thanks. How about you?
Good, good. So in the last few days, with reference to what's called the biomass revision of the Renewable Portfolio Standard, there was a hearing out in Springfield to talk about the revisions, and I guess I wanted to get a download from you as to what was going on in Springfield, why did it matter, and kind of what happened there. Can you fill us in?
Yeah, so basically, the Department of Energy Regulations opened up about a month ago or close to a month ago a comment period for changing the renewable portfolio standard definitions for Class 1 renewable energy, which is considered the highest tier, the highest stringency, and the best kind of renewable clean energy that we want to be promoting in Massachusetts. And they scheduled a couple hearings related to this, but they did not schedule one in Springfield. And the reason that scheduling a hearing in Springfield was a big deal is because the proposed changes to the regulation would lower emissions efficiency requirements and emissions requirements for biomass power plants. And right now in Springfield, a company, Palmer Renewable Energy, is proposing or reproposing their power plant there that does not meet the current RPS standards for efficiency and emissions. But if this state regulation were to change, Palmer Renewable Energy would receive millions of dollars in subsidies through the renewable energy certificates under this regulation, and that would allow the plant to be financially viable, and it would basically greenlight this plant to be built in Springfield.
I mean, in the city of Springfield, inside the limits where people live, right?
Yes, exactly, in the north section. I believe. And this is a big deal. Springfield is important in this because they've actually been fighting this for 10 years now. About 10 years ago, these regulations were made stringent enough. The Palmer Renewable Power Plant wasn't able to get financing to go through, thanks to a lot of activism from Arise for Social Justice. And Springfield is considered an environmental justice community, and it has the second highest asthma rate in the country as far as the city goes.
And so they, Oriana, just quickly, what does it take to be considered an environmental justice community, just so that people know?
Yeah, so you have to have a certain percentage. There's a couple of different metrics that the state of Massachusetts uses. A percentage of concentration of people that are considered low income, who English is their second language or don't speak English, or are people of color. So that's
what's going on in Springfield near this plant, right? That's an issue.
Yeah, so they both qualify through those demographic definitions, and they already have been overburdened by, I believe it's a trash incinerator nearby. So they've already been subject to what are considered environmental injustices that disproportionately impact their community rather than wealthier communities in Massachusetts.
Interesting. So what happened in the hearing? I mean, was it well attended? Was it fireworks? Was it a sleepy affair?
So, yeah, I mean, luckily this hearing happened because activists out in Springfield requested the DOER to hold an additional hearing for them. So thankfully they did that, since these changes would disproportionately impact Springfield. And there was a big rally before the actual hearing started. So there was a big turnout, a lot of energy. There was lots of creative signs, and I posted on our Facebook and Instagram an inhaler, like, that was built out of paper mache.
Before you go on, I'm an old fuddy-duddy. I don't have an Instagram account. How can people find Instagram? I mean, how do they Google it? How do they find it on Instagram?
Oh, yes. If you go to Mass Climate Action's Instagram, which is Mass Climate Action Network, you should be able to find it. It's our most recent picture.
That's great. So there was a big to-do outside. That sounds great.
Yeah. Lots of energy, lots of rallying. And then even in the meeting itself, it actually went like an hour beyond scheduling because there were so many people signed up to speak and so much energy around it. There were 60 people signed up to speak. And there were some really chilling and impassioned speeches from both residents of Springfield who have already had to deal with really traumatic and disheartening effects of the bad air quality already, and as well as the director of Arise for Springfield really eloquently illustrated the problems, the what environmental injustices are, and that why was her no and her community's no about these regulations and the Palmer Renewable Energy Power Plant. Why wasn't that good enough? Why are other communities no
right.
Good enough, but not theirs?
Interesting. Well, I really appreciate you taking the time to chat. This is great to hear. I'm glad you and MCAN were part of that, and that to see that this went forward. Now, I presume there will be the other thing. Will there be additional hearings, or what's the status of the whole biomass regulation now? Do you know?
So that was actually the final hearing. There were a number of requests last night to extend the comment period, but currently the comment period ends tomorrow at 5 p.m. on June 7th.
Okay. So if people hear this before June 7th, they can still get their commentary in there and try and let the DEP know what's going on, right?
Yes, DOER.
DOER. DOER. Well, again, Oriana, thank you so much for taking the time to chat. Again, I appreciate you being there, and it's wonderful to hear that this has worked out so well. You take care, okay?
All right. Thank you.
Thanks. So there you have it. That's the deal from Springfield. I like to have a fireplace. I love a fireplace, but I don't think electricity.
No, it's very
Huga. Burning.
Very cozy.
Yes. But making electricity with firewood from wood is not my idea of a good time. So there you go, Mariah. What we should do is we'll put it down there. Let me remind everybody that we'll put up links to most of what we talked about at the blog. And if I get my iPad going, I'll find out that little thing that I should have memorized by now. Yeah, you can check out the links to most of what we've discussed at the blog. It's at massclimateaction.org/blog. You can find us on the Facebook page at /massclimateaction. You can send us an email. Tell us what you think to podcast@massclimateaction.net. Please let us know what we ought to be talking about. You can listen to us directly on your smartphone using Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Overcast, Podbean, and now you can find us on Spotify. You, of course, can find us on Apple Podcasts by searching for Massachusetts Climate Action. I want to thank D.R. Tucker for all of his research report, and we want to close by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, because we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the United States transform its energy sector over the next decade under a just and equitable plan that uses regulation, investment, and a price on carbon to safeguard our collective future. So, Mariah, thank you very much for being here.
Always a pleasure.
Thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.
Very cool.